Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is Debbie Gangish with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketing Radio. This week we're on the road in the windy city of Chicago, Illinois, and today is going to be a fantastic topic because we're going to talk about, can't we just all get along, that chasm between sales and marketing, and how you can close that chasm between sales and marketing. You guys know the drill. Every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we need to talk to real revenue marketers. Not experts telling you what to do, but people who are in the trenches and are producing revenue through marketing every single day. And you'll learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so if you have a question, you can press 1, you can raise your hand. We have a moderator, or you can also go into the chat room, and we're happy to include everybody in the dialogue today. Now, before I introduce our guests, and we do have two today, which I'm so excited about, I do want to take a moment, like I do at every show, to define the term revenue marketer. Because, again, we have folks listening from all over the globe, and sometimes people are like, revenue marketer, what is she talking about? So revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. It's not just another checkbox in your to-do box. Revenue marketers have revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. These people are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. And a common denominator across all revenue marketers is they use some type of full-featured marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practices. Now, in this show every week, we explore every aspect of revenue marketing, everything from what kind of metrics are these people producing, what kind of people and skills are required, how they're being compensated, what does their organizational structures look like? What are the key processes that they're addressing? How do they align sales and marketing, our top topic for today? What technology stack they're using? What do they do about content and creative? And really, all the demand generation strategies and tactics that are required to turn traditional marketing into revenue marketing. And the great thing about this show is that every revenue marketer begins exactly where you are today, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas so that your journey to becoming a revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. So I am so pleased to introduce today's guest, and I know I say this every week, but Heather Bennett in particular is one of the best revenue marketers I have ever run up against. And she is also here today with Adam Klein. So let me tell you a little bit about these people, and then we'll get into our interview. Currently, Heather is the VP of Marketing, and she also runs inside sales at M5 Networks out of New York City. She relies on her extensive sales background to help M5 grow revenue by developing successful and repeatable sales processes and marketing initiatives. And one of the great things about having Heather on the show is that we see a very strong correlation between revenue marketing and people having some aspect of sales in their background. Prior to M5, Heather earned her reputation as a top producer in the technology industry, helping companies build out web and disaster recovery architecture for companies like Interactive Futures in New York and Cambridge Computer in Cambridge, Mass. She then called on that experience and her passion for developing people as she helped executives and their sales teams improve effectiveness through her consulting startup, Heather Bennett Resources. She brought her innovative approach to clients in many industries, including technology, insurance, and manufacturing. Now, Adam works with Heather at M5 Networks, and Adam is the inside sales manager. Adam's skills are firmly rooted in anything that's remotely related to lead generation, which makes him a key part of M5's marketing team. He's been with the inside sales department since its inception, and he fully understands the growing pains of forming a solid team across sales and marketing, creating systems and processes, and working together to get a revenue result. In addition, Adam is also the newly appointed co-president of the New York chapter of the American Association of Inside Sales Professionals. So Heather and Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie.
Now, Heather, you're in New York today, and Adam, you're in Orlando today, right?
That's correct.
Okay, great. So Heather, why don't you start and tell us a little bit about M5 and what it is that you guys do, what kind of market you serve.
Sure. M5 Networks has been in business for about 10 years. We provide hosted VoIP business phone systems to businesses in the mid-market. Our targets are companies who consider themselves service providers and rely on the phones to help make them revenue. So it's just another piece of helping people make better sales, another tool in the toolbox.
And what size companies do you guys go after?
We have companies everywhere from 10 to a few thousand people, but our sweet spot, I would say, is between 20 and 500.
Okay. And your sales cycle is about how long?
2 months.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So with that as a background, I mean, clearly Heather and Adam are working for a company. It's not a, you know, a kabillion-dollar organization. And we like to have companies of different sizes that serve different markets on the show. So you could see that they're really a mid-market provider of services. So Heather, why don't you tell us about your revenue marketing journey? I know it started about 2 years ago. So just kind of give us a historical perspective of how you started this revenue marketing journey.
Sure. So as you mentioned before, my background was in sales. I had my own consulting firm, Heather Bennett Resources, and M5 was one of my clients. I love the company for so many different reasons that I won't get into, but I joined as a sales manager. And I was frustrated with the way marketing was working here at M5. I don't think we were getting what we needed out of it. And, of course, as a salesperson, what I thought I needed were leads. So I asked to take over the marketing department, and I did. And one of the things I realized right away is that we weren't really set up to provide the sales team with the kind of leads they needed to go out and produce predictable. So what I did was add an inside sales team. We'll talk a little bit about what their duties and responsibilities are. And Adam happens to be my first hire, and one of the luckiest days is the day I interviewed Adam. He's been fabulous for us for 2 years.
And so so you went through a system selection process, and I believe that you guys chose Eloqua, correct?
That's right. One of the things we realized right away is that we needed tools. We already were devout Salesforce.com users. Our telephone system, which we use and sell, integrates with Salesforce.com. So we were sold on getting the most we could out of CRM. But what we realized is that Salesforce or even some of the tools we were using to get email out weren't really robust enough to get us what we wanted. So we evaluated a few different marketing automation tools, and we ended up choosing Eloqua. And I think that was in about February. It'll be 2 years in February we've been using Eloqua.
Okay, excellent. And so what is your basic implementation look like? I mean, people are interested, and even though we're going to be talking about some other topics, I think folks are always interested in kind of what your implementation looked like, how long it took, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Once I looked at the tool, I realized that this was something we could not do on our own. The software is powerful and complex, so we brought on the Pedowitz Group to help us get started and get started quickly. I knew I was being judged, and I didn't have a lot of time to start getting leads and revenue in the funnel. So we brought on the Pedowitz Group, and you guys did an unbelievable job of getting this up and started and getting nurture campaigns running in the very first month that we had the product. So it was very fast but very intense. My team really worked around the clock to really understand the tool and use it and just get as many programs as we could started so that we could start to test results.
Because it's like once you make the investment in the technology, that clock starts ticking and somebody's going to look for some revenue to come out the other end, right, Heather?
Yeah, no joke. And we have a very short sales cycle on an average of 60 days, sometimes even sooner. So people want to say, hey, you started using Eloqua 30 days ago and there's no revenue attributed, so what the heck? I mean, it ain't cheap. So we were really
under the gun to put some
numbers on the board. And that really leads into why the inside sales team and Adam are so key to making that happen. So we were able, because of our quick start with Petowitz Group and Eloqua, able to get leads from our website and from our email campaigns. But what was happening where we were giving those leads to the field sales force, and they were just going nowhere. And the feedback I was getting is these leads are crap. So you know that's the constant battle between marketing and sales. The leads aren't good enough. You don't give us enough leads. Hey, you're not following up on these leads. So what we created was the inside sales group who turned those leads into appointments where the sales rep really all they had to do is show up and have an opportunity pretty much laid at their feet. And that's the key, I think, that made our program so successful.
So let me ask you this question, and oh, by the way, I'll let all of our listeners know, Heather also did an interview for us last year, which is also on Blog Talk Radio, or you can go to our website under resources, and I think within about 6 months or 7 months, they actually had 13 or 14 lead nurturing programs up and running, so they really did have a fast start, and that was a great interview on nurturing. But tell me, now, you guys bought Eloqua, and did you start running campaigns and then decide after like a few weeks or a few months that inside sales would be something that you guys wanted to add? Kind of tell me a little bit more about what the chronology of that was, Heather.
I believe inside sales, the thought of inside sales happened I think Adam had come on right before we bought Eloqua, but the idea to use those two together really didn't come to me until we started to get the leads from the Eloqua campaigns. My thought was, the inside sales group was just going to go ahead and smile and dial, get out those yellow pages and just cold call. And for reasons we could have another talk show about, I don't think that works anymore. So once we put the Eloqua generated warm leads together with the inside sales group, that's when we really started to have fantastic results.
And you know, that's absolutely true. It's so fascinating to me how you can have these inside sales groups. And I was recently talking to a prospect, and they made the comment, "Oh, our inside salespeople, it's our cold calling group. Why would they want to have warm leads?"
Yeah.
I really laughed at that. So Adam, tell us a little bit about, so here you were hired by M5. You were probably coming on board and doing inside sales kind of like, you know, the old way. So tell us what that was like.
Well, in the interview process with M5, you know, I've known the company since they pretty much started. I worked with another company in a past life that was the 21st client of M5, so I was familiar with the company and the culture. When I sat down with Heather, I said to her, "Tell me about the inside sales department," and she said, "Well, you know, this is you're it. We're starting fresh." And I was really excited about the opportunity to really help develop, be a part of the team from the ground floor up. And what I had learned in the past was my skill set really was good at lead generation. I was not very good at closing the deal. So I thought that the opportunity really fit my skill set very well.
So when you first came in and Heather started talking about Eloqua and how that worked, kind of, and given your background, what did you think about all that?
Well, I knew that the CRM we were using, you know, could only take us so far. We needed the ability to nurture and send emails en masse. But when I learned more about Eloqua and the ability to be able to track if somebody opened up an email that I sent, and the ability to have a real insight into what the campaign was doing, it was a tool that I hadn't been accustomed to in the past. So it was a nice eye opener for me.
So what do you think is the biggest difference in the way you work in inside sales now that you're downstream from a marketing automation system? What's the biggest difference for you?
The biggest difference, and Heather alluded to it, is warm leads, rather than just being able to have my, my team just pick up a phone and make dials, I now have the luxury of people who have heard about us, are familiar with us, who have interest, and we're making a lot more calls to people who want to take our call. So a lot less battles with the gatekeeper, and a lot less, these people have asked for it, and that obviously makes life a lot easier for any sales team.
So now tell me, so on a day in, day out basis, Adam, what percentage of your calls are you guys doing that are behind warm leads versus still doing some cold calling?
Probably 85% are warm leads of some sort. We're still doing some quote more grassroots stuff, sending out direct mail, pulling leads, pulling names and trying to see what works and what doesn't work. But thankfully, we're an organization, as Heather said, that believes that the cold calling isn't the most effective way to do it.
It really isn't, and it's so. And you're right, Heather. We should probably do a panel discussion on that, and get some people who are using these technologies with inside sales and sales, and say why cold calling is dead. It's archaic, and it is a cost that companies are bearing that really is ridiculous with today's technology. So we'll have to plan that. But in the meantime, Heather, if you could tell us how it works. So tell us a little bit more about the process from the time you have an inquiry until the lead gets scored, it passes to inside sales, and the kind of activities that they do before it passes over to sales. So just tell me a little bit about that process.
Sure. So our leads come in, I would say we've really tried to put our leads into seven different buckets, and probably four or five of those buckets are directly related to the marketing and automation activities that we do. So once a lead comes in, it automatically populates the inside sales queue in Salesforce.com and sends an email to both me and Adam that a lead has come in. Adam's process is
what makes it a lead, Heather?
Oh, it has to fit some criteria about size. It has to, we match it against the database to make sure that it's not a current customer that fell into the wrong landing page or something like that. Some of the lead scoring we put in place helps us understand how qualified it is for us. So is it in one of our target verticals? Have they visited the website more than once? Things of that nature. And before it gets kicked to Adam.
Okay, so you're doing lead scoring based on both firmographic and behavior. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
The truth is, because of our size, there aren't that many leads that we get that we do disqualify, because we are a horizontal product. Most of our leads qualify enough to get into the inside sales queue.
And I would rather have the opportunity to speak to them and make sure than always disqualify them based on certain criteria.
Okay.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I think with an organization bigger than ours, I think the lead scoring becomes a much bigger part because of how expensive it is to spend time with prospects who just aren't a fit.
Okay. All right.
So once the queue gets
populated.
Right, the queue gets populated, and then Adam does a little bit of qualification and then passes those leads off to his team. His team makes the call and makes sure that they're has a little bit of a conversation with the client and starts the sales process, which ends in the booking of an appointment for one of our sales representatives. And once that is booked, the lead gets passed off to a field sales rep along with a time and a place for the meeting to occur.
Okay, so let me ask you a few more detailed questions about the process.
Sure.
When the inside sales queue gets populated and you both get an alert that that's happened, Heather, you said that Adam does a little bit more qualifying. What is it that you do at that point, Adam?
Well, I'm going through our database for starters. I want to make sure that this isn't somebody that somebody's already working on, or there isn't anything that's obvious that it doesn't make sense to have a conversation, or maybe it makes sense for me to go over to Heather and ask get some a second opinion before we start to qualify. I may take a look at a website. I may sometimes I even call myself and have a quick conversation before I pass it on to the inside sales guys.
Okay, all right. And then you pass it on to the inside team, and then they call, they have the conversation, and they book the appointment, and at that point they pass it over to field sales, correct?
That's correct.
Correct. Yeah, they're doing some surface qualifying and making it very clear that they're going to be called by somebody, and an Outlook invite usually goes out.
Okay. So how long did it take you guys to get a seamless process put together?
It took a while. The problem, I would say the bottleneck at one time was me trying to run marketing and manage the inside sales team, because I really was just trying to do too much. And all of a sudden, all those marketers out there are forced into these sort of quasi-sales roles, because that's the way it is right now, and all of a sudden there becomes a lot of work to do. So having someone, promoting someone to inside sales manager and having someone understand the process from that side really helped. So Adam, I don't know, what would you say, probably almost 6 months before we had a really very fine-tuned process?
I'd say 6 months is accurate.
And then there's the whole part of getting the sales guys to buy in on the other side, right? Making sure they actually attend the appointment.
As Heather mentioned up front.
Yeah, okay.
we'll get to the sales people. I just have a couple more questions about your inside team, because this is a real trend that we're seeing, for organizations that are building revenue marketing practices, for organizations that are investing in marketing automation systems, and then, making that transition from traditional to revenue marketing. We're seeing a lot of these inside, you call them inside sales, you might call them inside telequalifying team, whatever that is, but we're seeing a great deal of growth, and you're right, Heather, marketing is becoming like a quasi-sales role, so for people who don't have a background in that, it can be a little bit uncomfortable. For you it's a lot more natural because you do have a background in sales, but I'm curious about not specifically the compensation, but the compensation structure of your inside sales team. Do they just have a base salary? Do they have a variable component that's based on quality or opportunity conversions or anything like that?
This is a fantastic question, and something that Adam and I still debate and struggle with and change year to year. So basically, they're getting paid for the number of appointments. They get a base salary plus bonuses based on the number of appointments that they schedule that actually happen. And most, I would say, Adam, right, like 95% of the appointments that get scheduled actually happen at this point.
Correct.
Yeah. So we put that number in as number of appointments, the bonus. And then we tried to add some things to make revenue a piece of the comp plan too, or the conversion rate to opportunities. So there's lots of variables. And I think Adam and I are probably, and Adam, please feel free to disagree, but I think we think that the number of appointments booked plus a little bit for deals that actually close is probably the way to go.
That's where we're going to, as we're still adjusting. I think next year we'll add more of the compensation part. But I think the idea is the thing that's going to motivate the guys that they can control. They can't control what closes as much, but they're excited about what closes. So we want them to have a piece of that action as well. So that's something that Heather and I have decided to add.
Right. And the thing that I would caution everyone to watch out for, and Adam and I learned this lesson the hard way, is when you just pay on appointments, which seems like the best way to do it, if you don't hire the right people, you're going to get a lot of appointments that really should have never been booked. And we had some experience with that. So it's important that the quality of the appointments stay high, because once the quality goes down, you're going to lose your field salespeople, their belief in the program. So you have to ensure that the quality of those appointments stays very high.
Okay. So I want to talk about some metrics that you guys have achieved, and then I want to pick up our conversation and continue around you know, sales, kind of what's happening, you know, further downstream. But Heather, share with me, you know, you're a revenue marketer. You're one of the very best revenue marketers, probably, you know, that's revenue marketing today, quite frankly. So tell us a little bit about the kind of metrics and the kind of impact that you guys have been able to make in the last 2 years on revenue in your organization.
Sure. So the first thing I would say is that to all the new revenue marketers out there is measure everything, even if no one asks you. Measure every single thing you do because you have a very short time frame to prove your worth when you start getting into this. So Adam's team is responsible probably for up to about 30% of the entire company's revenue today. So they're setting appointments that generate 30% of the company's revenue, and that's something we never could have expected when we started this 2 years ago. It's one of the only metrics that continues to go up in the right in the sales arena through this terrible economy for us, and we couldn't be happier. What's holding us back from even increasing that number is, I think, just the number of people we have and the number of warm leads we feed them. So I think that it's a totally scalable process. We're looking to add to the team very soon and continue to pour resources into this market. Before this, we were relying on our partners to bring us the revenue, and that was very precarious for us, which is the whole reason why we started the inside sales team. So it's really put the company on much stronger footing in the last 2 years because we can predict what our revenue is going to be. So not only is it a lot of revenue, we know what it's going to be 2 or 3 months before. So that's incredibly valuable to the people who have stake in our company.
I love talking to a revenue marketer when they use words like predictability, because really at the end of the day, that's what it's about. And the fact that you can forecast, like sales forecast, you know that if you need to hit a certain number or if you need to hit a certain contribution, you just back it all the way up to the kinds of campaigns and the kinds of activities that you can do. And there's a direct correlation between your marketing efforts and the impact that you're making on revenue. This ability to predict the revenue and to treat it like a funnel, like sales treats their funnel, is the hallmark of a revenue marketer. And I also love the fact, Heather and Adam, that your team is contributing 30% of the company's revenue, which is simply awesome. So if you think about it, you know, a lot of times when companies are in a crisis when it comes to top-line revenue growth, which many companies in America are right now, the first thing they'll do is say, let's go add some feet on the street, right, those outside salespeople. These resources are really expensive to add. Even if you're not selling big ticket items, they are expensive to add, and it takes a long time to get somebody trained and up to speed. And I would think, Adam and Heather, given the well-honed process that you have, you could scale this and get a revenue impact quicker. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, to be more specific on how exactly we do that, we break the leads that we get down into 7 categories, and we measure. So I know exactly what the conversion rate on each of those lead sources is going to be from appointment to opportunity and opportunity to close. And so at the end of a month, when we look at what kind of appointments we set up, we know what the revenue is going to be at the end of the 60-day sales cycle. So because we can do that and we have 2 months to look into the future, we know where to pour the money. We know that, you know, some of our marketing campaigns are only going to drive 3% revenue, but if they're cheap enough, let's just keep scaling it because we know that we can get more if we just pour some money into it. So we've gotten very granular.
That's awesome. Give me an example. Do you mind sharing some of your conversion rates of opportunity to close? One of your best rates are? Yeah.
Sure. So we don't count leads anymore. That's when I took over marketing. That's one of the things that I did, because a lead can mean a list uploaded from a Hoover's database. So we stopped talking about leads and we only talk about appointments. So what we measure is appointment to close. So for instance, people that organically find us on the web, we know that we have an 8.77% close rate from the appointment to the actual sale closing. So that's pretty good, actually, for just web. We know what our sales rep generation looks like. I think for overall from inside sales, we have about a 10% close rate from appointment to close.
Excellent. Excellent. And with a pretty fast sales cycle, too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I think, again, I just want everybody who's listening to this interview to listen to the way Heather's talking about these metrics. She's measuring everything, which I think is great advice. She's got 7 major categories that leads come from, and she can talk about, you know, how those leads are flowing through the process, at what kind of conversion rates. Let me ask you this question. Heather, would your CEO go to the market and say, and day in and day out, marketing is giving us 30% of our revenue?
Absolutely. I happen to be lucky. Our CEO is wanted to be a marketer when he was little, I think. And he talks about our marketing wins all the time. It's something he's really passionate about. But I think deep down why he likes it is because it's predictable. He keeps calling it the sales machine, you know, and he's got this visual of us dumping stuff in one side and knowing exactly what's going to come out the other. So he loves it. And being a SaaS company, we look at what other SaaS companies are doing and measure our cost of acquiring a customer up against our peers so that we're constantly measuring us not only against ourselves but against the other SaaS companies.
And how do you report these metrics to your senior management team? What does that look like? Is it something they can go get? Is it something that's pushed to them?
Everything. It's kind of crazy, actually. So every single day, the senior management team gets dashboards based on marketing forecast, sales forecast, and closed sales, you know, what has been done and booked. Then on a weekly basis, the senior management team gets together and I provide the initiatives and the results from the week before. Every day, the number of appointments we get booked gets announced. Every day, Adam announces the appointments that are happening that day. And once a month, we sit on the hot seat in front of the senior management team and put together a deck that shows the metrics, there's hundreds of them, and how we balanced against last month and last year. And then once a quarter, we do the same thing for the board of directors.
That is absolutely awesome. So you've got a real process there for your analytics and your reporting and how that gets communicated.
Yeah, and I wish it was all really easy and automated, but there's still some things we have to do by hand. Everyone has to expect that no matter how many tools you have, there's always something that somebody wants that you just can't pull out of Salesforce and Eloqua. So it's a pretty intensive process. Today's October 7th. We just finished the reporting for September. So it takes us a good week.
Completely understandable, and that's the way it always happens. So you guys began this revenue marketing journey about 2 years ago. You invested in a full-featured marketing automation system. You queued up the inside sales group, kind of got that running. So when all this was going on, what was sales thinking about all this activity?
In the beginning, I would say they were very, very skeptical, and we had a really hard time getting the sales team invested in the appointments that Adam was setting. Adam can probably talk a little bit about that.
It was an interesting process in the beginning because, you know, we were new and ultimately we were a two-person team. And, you know, the initial appointments we set up, as we learned, they weren't as good as the appointments we're giving to them now. We weren't as good at qualifying. We didn't know the product as well. And they used to come back from meetings and give us the big thumbs down that it wasn't a good meeting. And it made it tough in the beginning. But as we got better at it, we're at a point now where if, you know, there's a rep that doesn't think he's getting his fair share of leads, you know, Heather and myself hear about it. So it's definitely, you know, it's a complete turnaround from what it was in the beginning, and now they really, you know, they like the leads that we're giving them and they want them.
Yeah, and to add to that, there are specific kinds of leads we get without getting into too many details that are highly competitive. They come from a place where we know the people looking at us are looking at 3 or 4 of our biggest competitors as well, and have lined us up in a spreadsheet. And what we found is that not every one of our reps was really skilled enough to be able to handle those. Not that they weren't skilled enough, it's different skills when you're starting right in a competition from the beginning. So we have paths for certain leads that only go to certain teams or certain individuals who are trained on certain kinds of selling. I have one person who only sells over the phone, so anyone we can't ever get to for whatever reason, she used to be a trainer for us, and she's good at demoing all the features of our product over the phone, so she gets all those. Our process has sort of leaked into the sales team now, and so the leads have paths based on how we position them from the beginning.
So what was that like? Was it your idea to say, you know, I'm not sure this person should be getting these kinds of leads because his close rate's low on it? How'd that conversation go?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, actually. it wasn't pretty, and because I had been a sales manager here before, it was probably not. It probably could have been worse. But what I first did was took on the leads myself. I took leads that the sales team were coming back to me and Adam with and saying they weren't good. We were picking them out of the garbage and closing them, and sort of being like, so what? How happened with this one? So that didn't go over so well. I probably wouldn't have done that way again. But once we started to give the leads to a certain few people who were closing them, more people got bought in. And I think we're at the point now where everyone sees that they are valuable and maybe they didn't value them enough in the past. But it was an ugly time, Debbie. There was 3 months there where it was hard for me in the office.
So tell me some more specifics around what you did to kind of overcome that chasm during that time. And I've heard all different kinds of tactics, but can you give me some more specifics around what you did?
We made sure the quality of the leads were high. So Adam took the responsibility of making sure that the quality leads were high and debriefing all the sales reps when they came back from his appointments. That was very key, that they saw that Adam was really invested in their success. So, you know, it's just a lot of that one-on-one time. Not everything can be measured with a metric in Salesforce at Eloqua. You still have to be able to talk. We also started going to all the sales meetings. There's no such thing as a sales or marketing meeting. They all happen together. We present our metrics the same way that in the same meetings that sales presents theirs. And all the sales and marketing people are paid in similar ways where there's bonuses. So everyone is driven to success the same way. I think when the salespeople see the marketing people comped like they are, it makes them really believe that marketing is in the trenches with them.
We gave the sales guys, Debbie, you know, visibility, you know, so, and I make them aware of this on a regular basis. If they want to know how many leads they got from inside sales, you know, in the last 30 days, in the last 60 days, so it scales out, they can look at it, so they can compare, you know, I do my best to keep it pretty even, so they know that nobody else is getting more than they're getting, and they're getting their, you know, their fair share, and I think that also helped.
So tell me about when did you come up with the idea that once you passed an appointment to sales, Adam, that you would debrief the salesperson after they had the call?
Well, I mean, it's good, I think, for both sides to be able to, you know what happened. The only way that we can get any better and learn, you know, from them what, you know, maybe we, you know, we should be qualifying on better, and there were a couple of key things that we, you know, that were eye openers for me. We weren't asking enough, you know, what their contracts were, and a lot of these guys were going on calls, and yeah, great call, we're a year away, you know, and those are things that they wanted to know, you know, going in, you know, and it also, you know, it also helped them, and actually a lot of times it helped them because it helped keep them on, you know, sharp on the ball and making sure that they were following up with people correctly, or if there's anything that we can do to help them out further.
And marketing does, inside sales reports to marketing, but one of the things we've been able to do here, the inside sales people that are in the office, they sit with the salespeople. So they're right in there. The salespeople are hearing the calls happen. We have a very open environment in our New York office so that they're in it together, arm in arm. It's not like these guys are sitting somewhere else.
I love that. I think that's awesome. So let me just kind of recap some of the tactics that you guys used for our listening audience. Number one was you debrief sales after they followed up on the appointment that you set. And I think a lot of marketers, you know, a lot of times they don't take the time to do that. And yet nobody knows better than the right questions to ask than the salesperson who goes eye to eye, toe to toe, you know, belly button to belly button with these customers every single day. So being able to debrief the salesperson and learn what was good or what was bad so you can take that back for better qualifying is just a great tactic. I think that's really wonderful. I think going to meetings, sales, and having those joint meetings is something that's really valuable. I think taking a look at revenue and having conversations with the sales team around the revenue that you need to create. I think giving salespeople, you were talking about, Adam, visibility to the lead flow, how many each rep has received, and also probably the conversions that are happening from the leads. I also think that brilliant, having this inside sales team actually sit with the sales team and really kind of having them work on this together as a team. I think those are all awesome ideas. So let's talk a little bit about, so you began this about 2 years ago, and it sounds as though now, Heather and Adam, you guys have a really good, smooth working relationship with the sales organization. What's next in working with sales? Is there someplace else that you'd like to take this?
Well, one of the interesting things I think that's come of this that I think that people may find helpful is that we're using the inside sales leads to ramp new salespeople. So one of the things we struggle with as a company is getting salespeople on board and productive within a time frame that's cost effective for us. And we've struggled with this as a company for a while. So the birth of this inside sales team, along with this plethora of leads that's starting to come through, what we've done now is create a team of people who are new salespeople. They're sales field reps. And while we're training them on our message and on how our product goes, we're taking prospecting responsibilities totally away from them. So for the first 3 months or so that they're here, all they're doing is learning our product and going on meetings, no prospecting, because of our inside sales team is providing all the leads for them. So this way, they can really hone the message. It's like batting practice. They're doing 2 or 3 appointments a day, and they're getting confidence in the message. They're getting confidence because they're closing deals, and they learn our product, and they learn our message. And then once that is rock solid, then we start with they start on their prospecting journey as field sales reps and start and try and work on networking and doing their own prospecting. But I mean, this has been a total breakthrough for us this year, that to use these leads, to use in the team, the leads Adam's team is producing to help train reps has been a breakthrough, and we're very excited about scaling our sales team that way.
So how much time, what kind of improvement, so if you had hired a rep 2 years ago and tried to get them up to speed, and if you hire a rep today with this new process and get them up to speed, what do you think the difference in time to competency is?
Yeah, it's a great question that I know the answer to all too well. So we were assuming that a rep should be able to ramp to full quota in 6 months. So in the old way, we expected a rep to hit their monthly MRR quota, we call it here, at month 6. And what we were finding, it was happening at month 13 or 14, if it happened at all, which is a lot of money to spend on a rep before they start producing. So with this new process, the two people that are fully through the process now started producing in month 2 and 3 and are both over 90% of quota year to date. So it like staggering difference. So now we can ramp someone in 4 to 5 months instead of 13 months. I mean, the sales managers, you know, drool when they hear these things.
That's absolutely amazing. That's truly amazing. So, okay, so being able to ramp new reps. I also want to go back to, Adam, something that you said, and that's early in the conversation when I asked you about what percentage of your time are you cold calling versus doing warm calling. And you said for your inside sales team that you guys are doing warm calling 80 to 85% of the time. Heather, what is your marketing activity? What's going on up here that these people are making warm calls 80 to 85% of the time? Because I can hear a lot of marketers saying right now, yeah, she's probably got a team of 50 people, and, you know, they're doing all this stuff. So tell us about how you create that activity at the top of the funnel. You know, how many campaigns, what kind of what does that look like? And how large is your marketing team?
The marketing team is about 3 full-time people and with a half-time person once in a while. Had I had 50, forget it. But no, we don't have a lot of people. And this is not something I shouldn't even be saying out loud, but nobody on our marketing team had marketing experience before. We just are a ragtag bunch of people who thought this stuff was really cool and we wanted to try it. So everyone works really, really hard. The campaign stuff is out of control. We've got our campaign guru who's probably running about 15 or 16 campaigns right now. Now, I know we said we were running 13 when we first started, but a lot of those were throwaways. We were just trying, and some worked and some didn't. Yeah. Now he's got 15 that are going and producing leads. He and Adam conspire all the time. What's the new subject line that's going to get people to respond today? So there's a lot of that going, and you know, he's putting in a lot of hours doing that. We also take advantage of some of the search engine optimized partners out there where you could actually buy leads, and then we buy those leads and put them through our nurturing process. So there we really can scale those quite a bit, because they're just out there to buy. They're incredibly expensive, and we know we have to close 10% of them for it to at least be worth it, but we're able to do that and measure that now. So that's been a great source of leads for us. But it doesn't really take a lot of people. It just takes a lot of focus. And the one thing I complain about with some marketing organizations, you end up taking on responsibility for so many things. I see so many marketing organizations that put HR on marketing. And you should have a demand generation team that's only focused on demand generation. And if there's something else that comes along, it should be put elsewhere in the company. Sometimes marketing feels like the catch-all, and that's something I'm really careful about here.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, day in and day out, when I talk to successful revenue marketers, they have said to their organization, no mas, you know, I'm going to be the demand generation or the revenue marketing team, or I'm not, right? Because
that's
as
right.
I said earlier in the broadcast, this is not just another check in your list of to-dos that you have to do as a marketer. If you're going to make significant revenue impact, 30% of your pipeline comes from marketing. It doesn't come from casual interactions. And again, Heather's company is not a large company. They've got, you know, 3 full-time marketers and a half-time person, and they're running 15 to 16 campaigns at any given time, because they as a team have really focused on the value that a marketing automation system can bring. They have focused on reshaping processes to improve the business and to improve the organization. And you just don't do that casually.
That's right. That's right. So when someone comes along and asks you to plan the company picnic, pass on that one.
The answer would be no, we can't do that.
David, the one thing that I've, you know, I really admire that Heather and her team does is they take the time and a lot of time to educate the salespeople on how to use these campaigns, in our weekly meetings and via email, and constantly reminding them of, you know, that these things exist, you know. And if there's a salesperson on our team that's not taking advantage of it, the only person they can blame is themselves.
Yeah, and we've stepped into the murky arena of opportunity marketing. So we're marketing to people that are already in the salesperson's funnel, and which is usually taboo. So we've taken some steps in that arena too, and that's helping the conversion rates. We're seeing some help yet. We've just started, so hopefully that'll continue.
And I want to talk about both of those things. So let me back up to, Adam, your comments about educating the salespeople. You're right. If you're doing 15 to 16 campaigns and a salesperson is doing a lot of their own prospecting, these field sales are, they should always have something they can refer to, something that they can send. And again, I'm sure that you guys are using Prospect Profiler from Eloqua so that the salesperson sends the email out. They can see if somebody clicked through or if they opened the email.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys educate them in that weekly meeting about what's coming out. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, so we talk about the campaigns that we have and how to get people into the campaigns. And they ask questions that 2 years ago I would have thought, you know, never would have happened. Like, hey, can I put an opportunity record instead of an account record or contact record into this campaign? And, like, what salesperson talks like that, right? Like, that's how you know that they're listening and they're using these tools because they're speaking a lingo. So they are. We absolutely probably once a month the sales meeting is totally marketing focused about what campaigns. We show them a little bit of the content of the emails, not all of it, because then it becomes like this whole argument about what you should exactly say. But generally, they
you don't want to get into that detail.
Yeah, leave
you
that
know,
to
Heather,
us.
We've actually built a campaign calendar in our instance of Salesforce,
mm-hmm.
so that our reps can come in on any day and know exactly what's going on, when it's going out. They've got full visibility via a calendar for that. Have you guys done something like that?
We haven't, but we've had requests for it, and it's something that is in our pile of stuff to do, but, the sales reps are screaming for it. Yeah.
Okay, I'll put you in touch with Scott Benedetti, who's our director of demand gen, and he can show you how he built that calendar for us in Salesforce. It's very, 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 very cool.
Cool.
And I also want to ask you about opportunity marketing, because I remember when you and I first met, this was something that we had mentioned in passing. And so tell me how you're doing opportunity marketing and tell people what that is, a little bit more about that.
Right. So as marketers, we're always worried about creating leads and for us creating a first appointment. It's like you hand it off to the rep and you hope for the best for it to close. But why can't marketers help reps in the process? So once you've established trust with your sales organization, they will let you help them while their prospects are in the sales funnel. So the very first step we've taken is, we look at it from a problem point of view. Like, what's the sales rep's biggest problem? And we asked them that question. And what they said is, I hate when a prospect tells me I'm not ready to do this right now. Call me in a month, and 30 days will be ready. So what do I do in that 30 days so that they don't forget me and without bugging them? So we have, for instance, a campaign set up, and it's called the Quiet for 30 Days campaign, and this is something that will send relevant content to someone who is probably going to buy from us or is looking to buy from us but does not want to be pushed in the sales process. So stuff relevant to their industry or just cool things that aren't pushy sales documents or not someone calling saying, are you ready now, are you ready now, but just to keep M5 Networks top of mind. So when that rep does call back in 30 days, it's not like, oh, yeah, I remember you. They've been receiving content that they think is valuable that hasn't been annoying, and it keeps them warm for the rep while that process is playing out.
And are you setting up alerts on that campaign?
We are. We are. So
we
know when people are looking at the content, and our guru, his name is Jeff Soriano, is looking to see what people are opening and what they're not so that he can continue to make the content more relevant to our prospects.
So when a sales rep wants to drop somebody into the Quiet for 30 Days campaign, how do they do that?
They're just changing the opportunity status to something we've labeled next step 30 days, I believe. Or is that it, Adam?
Sure. No, I don't remember the exact.
I think it's like called light, right? There's an opportunity status we have in our instance of Salesforce, and it lets Eloqua know that they need to be dropped in that campaign. So I think it's called next step 30 days.
So it's just done instantly. How cool is that?
Yeah,
and Adam
very
is
cool.
The inside sales team doing also the same type of dropping people into nurturing campaigns while they're trying to qualify them for appointments.
Yeah, and they're getting better and better at it. You know, I'm almost on a daily basis being asked the question, which campaign do you think I should put it into, and which is a good, you know, like Heather said, it's a good question to be, you know, to be asked, because it means that they're remembering to do it. And we have different campaigns. If we're calling on a lead that we can't get any contact with, you know, we haven't spoken to them at all, we'll put them in one campaign, and if we spoke to somebody and they say, hey, you know, call me back in a year, You know, nothing upsets me more, you know, to call somebody in a year and they say, oh, sorry, we did something, you know, 6 months ago. So at least, you know, if we put them into one of our nurture campaigns where every month they're getting something from us, keep in front of them, you know, if their timetable changes, you know, they're more apt to give us a call. So it's been working pretty well.
There have been fantastic studies out on the value of nurturing and how just the simple act of touching someone who needs to be nurtured once every 30 days, you know, within 18 months, you'll close about 70% of those leads. Those are pretty stunning numbers. And the fact that either inside sales or the sales organization can do it with one click, right, so you're not losing these people, really allows you as a smaller organization to work like a much larger organization and keep in the hopper and keep active and keep in digital dialogue with so very, very many more people. So, well, we're getting toward the end of our interview, and so I want to start with Adam and start with you, Adam, and say if you were going to give advice to a new revenue marketer who was looking potentially at, you know, trying to take on an inside telequalifying team, you know, what lessons learned would you share with them?
Well, I guess the first thing that I've learned in the 2 years at M5, and I'm pretty fortunate to be able to work with somebody like Heather, is to be open to everything and anything and really be willing to, you know, keep trying stuff. You know, just because something doesn't work today doesn't mean it's not going to work tomorrow. And just because something worked today doesn't mean that that's going to work tomorrow. You know, a lot of growing pains, you know, with our team and learning those things and not being so reactive, you know, and being proactive. And that's, you know, I think it's one of the things that has made our team, you know, successful as we are so far.
And what role would you say that marketing automation plays in your success?
We couldn't do it without it. I mean, I've been in sales roles before where you know, the tools weren't there, and I guess, you know, in some respects I didn't know what I didn't have. But you know, our team would not be successful. I can't show my team what they're doing and how well they're doing or how poorly they're doing unless, you know, I have the metrics and unless I have the ability to, you know, to easily put somebody into a campaign and be able to forget that they exist until they, you know, pop back up has been vital.
Okay, excellent. And Heather, what about you? I always love your advice. You're talking to a brand new revenue marketer. What do you want to tell them?
So last year you asked me this question and I said measure everything, and I want to repeat that with a caveat. I want to measure everything and teach others how to measure. Make sure that everyone is measuring and measuring the same way, and you become that much more believable when everyone can measure everything the same way. Before, I was the only one putting stats up, and everyone's like, okay, those are cool. But when everyone is measuring and everyone can do it, that's when people get really excited about when you start to see successes and failures. And I guess speaking of failures, expect them and know that they're going to happen, but just fail quickly. Failing is hard, and sometimes we don't want to let go of something that's not working because it makes us feel bad and don't want to admit defeat. But just practice getting up and standing in front of your CEO and say, guess what, I spent $25,000 on A, B, and C, and it did not work, so I'm going to stop spending money and do something else now. It happens, and it's always going to happen no matter how great you are. So just be proud to fail quickly, I guess, is the way to really make progress. And make sure you're getting the salespeople buy-in. Like, show them what you're doing. Show them that you're willing to get in the trenches with them and understand the sales process and get them to trust you. It'll happen slowly, but don't give up because it will happen.
I think that's just absolutely great advice. And Heather's executive VP of sales and marketing is Jim Kaner, and I first heard the expression from him. He said, Debbie, you got to fail forward and you got to fail fast, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. So, well, you guys have been fantastic today. Thank you so much for sharing this just rich in-depth wealth of information for us. I think every marketer struggles with the relationship with sales, and I think you guys have really helped us in two ways today. Number one, you've given us lots of good ideas for how they can close that chasm. And number two, you've really helped marketers begin to understand how they can become revenue marketers, which, again, for a lot of marketers, this is still very early days in the market. And so, again, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us, Debbie.
Yeah, thank you.